Let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
This is Patriots Playbook.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Patriots Playbook, breaking down last Sunday's game.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
Next Sunday's game.
Want to go odd. 5.
Patriots Playbook.
51 mirror.
And the rest of the 2007 NFL season.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
And some of the fun stuff in between.
Even. 51 grapes. Even. 51 grapes.
And now, here's John Roy.
Come on, let's go.
Not ready yet.
Let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
This is
Patriots. Your computer's slow. That's why. All right, I'm ready. I think I can do this. Thank you. We welcome you inside Patriots Playbook for Thursday. You know, sometimes computers just have a mind of their own. I went through this yesterday at home. I had my PC at home in my office. The hard drive crashed and burned yesterday. Complete and total waste.
Don't be jealous that I've been chatting online with babes all day.
Yeah, I wish. I've been trying to, pick up scrap pieces of all of my, football stuff that I've had saved on my hard drive, and it's not a pretty sight. So I've got a computer geek going through it and seeing what he can glean and save for me. And in the meantime, it's just, I've been in computer hell, let's face it, for about the last 24 hours. Yeah. Complete and total. So it doesn't surprise me that I get to come in here today and realize that Gary's computer is slow and it's not working like it, like it wants to here. Anyway, here we go. Here we go. I like this one. Can you figure out a way to sort the email so that John Rook doesn't spend 15 minutes rehashing an email you boys covered in depth? Oh, and if you're also reading this, John, it's Eddie Jackson. Eric Jackson is not on the Patriots roster. Thank you very much for that. Jonas in Jamaica Plain. You know, if we didn't have people like you, who the hell would correct us when we're wrong? I mean, just sit there and you just pick at every little nitpick thing that we have to do. Thank you, Jonas. Greatly appreciated for that. I'm totally serious about the thing. If I didn't have you looking out for me, pal, what the hell would I do? I'm a little ornery today. Sorry. It comes with being in computer hell for the last 24 hours. So there you go. Generally speaking, we do that, Jonas. I don't know what happened, to be honest with you. Usually the guys that leave some emails that they don't get to or for whatever reason. And as I have always tried to do, I have always tried to read the emails that you spend the time and take the time to send us just to get some conversation going. And, if it means that I've actually rehashed again an email that has been mentioned before, please forgive me. I'm going to throw myself at your mercy. I hope and pray you can find it in your heart to listen to this program a little bit more. Jonas, you picked the wrong day. You picked the wrong day, pal. If you think you can do any fleeping better, then by God, here you go. Pick up the phone or send me an email and give me something constructive rather than complaining about rehashing over an old email. Dope.
I apologize 1,000 times to you.
Webradio at patriots.com. That's how you can reach us here today. Told you, Jonas, you picked the wrong damn day today. 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. 508-543-7482. We'll get inside the Patriots locker room today and let you hear from some of the players as they give us their comments on preparing for the Miami Dolphins on Sunday at Dolphin Stadium. We will also hear from Patriots head coach Bill Belichick from earlier today here at Gillette. And in approximately 40 minutes, Russell Baxter from ESPN, NFL Research Coordinator, he will join us as he normally does on Thursdays. And not only will we take a look at the Pats and Dolphins matchup, but as we always do, we'll hit some of the key matchups around the week in the NFL, this being Week 7. The season continues to move along at a pretty good clip. Maybe it's just because of the opponent. Maybe it's just because of who they're playing. Maybe it's just, because of the dominance that the Patriots have shown on the field thus far. But did this week drag on a little bit longer than the other ones? Or is it just me? Or is it just because I've been in computer hell for 24 hours and I haven't been able to do anything but look at a computer screen and a blinking icon? I don't know. I can't. wait for Sunday to get here so we can kind of like get on with things. Now, I actually have to go out and cover some college football this weekend. I'm doing the national radio broadcast from Miami at Florida State on Saturday in Tallahassee. So, as it turns out, fortunately, I'm able to get a flight back to New England in order to pick up probably the second half of the game on Sunday. So I'll be in the air during the first half. I'm hoping that, you know, when I land that the game will be already in hand, but you never know. We spent quite a bit of time talking about it on yesterday's show, and in honesty, you know, you look at the spread, you look at the odds. I mean, you're a 17-point road favorite. When was the last time you remember seeing something like that? I mean, I've seen the fact that they were 17-point favorites. I mean, we've had them home favorites by that much a couple of times already this year. But a 17-point road favorite? A home team giving 17 points? I find that mind-boggling. I think you only see that in college football. And you only usually see that in college football when you've got, you know, a potential rout on your hands. And even though, you know, I've been talking about how it's been a tough place for the Patriots to play, this South Florida, this Miami, this Dolphin Stadium, whatever you want to call it, over the years, and the numbers certainly bear that out as we've been talking about all week here. But don't we, when it comes right down to it, don't we usually also allow that the boys, the guys, the odds makers in Vegas usually have it right more often than not? I mean, you know, sometimes they're scary good when it comes to comparing the relative well-being of teams in any given matchup. And the fact that they've got the Patriots as a 17-point favorite on the road tells me that the Pats would be at least a 3-touchdown favorite had they played here at home. Of course, that may still be to come later this season when the Dolphins visit here. So, do I think the Patriots win? Certainly. The one thing that I think that you have to guard against this week, and I really don't think overconfidence will be a factor, because I don't think that's ever been a factor in this locker room here. I think the one thing that you have to guard from is, certainly you have to hope that you don't have injuries that can become definitive and stumble, you know, cause you to stumble somewhere else down the line. You have to hope that you don't shoot yourself in the foot. You want to try to play as clean a game as possible, without mistakes, turnovers and penalties, certainly. So that would be number two. And then I guess, number three, just play well enough, play crisp enough to where you can kind of get out of Dodge, so to speak, without any major damage done and go on to the next game. You're going to have a better test next week, albeit here at home, but conceivably you're going to have a better test against the Washington Redskins here at home next week. So I think you want to kind of get out of this thing, you know, for lack of a better phrase, alive and still ticking, and hopefully with a seventh win, so you can concentrate on that next week. So that has to be your goal as a Patriot. As a fan, I can see where it would be reasonable that, you know, if you, you know, play the game or whatever, you know, you'd want the Patriots to cover or, you know, who knows? I mean, you know, you want your team to continue dominating throughout the NFL. I guess I can certainly understand that to an extent. I mean, after all, we're all probably Patriots fans here as well. So with that having been said, you always want your team to do that. So people are talking about your team in reverent tones. I mean, go to any website that has to deal with the NFL and you can read it. I mean, the cover of SI this week, I don't know did you see it? Tom Brady on the cover of Sports Illustrated under the headline, "Yes, that good." That's pretty good. Tom Brady and the Patriots dominate the Cowboys to go 6-0. That's what it says on the cover of Sports Illustrated this week. You know, so I don't know if you believe still in the SI jinx or not, but it hasn't jinxed the Patriots yet. That's for certain. And I read Tim Layden, who wrote the story in SI, I read his article, and it was actually pretty well balanced. Talked about a lot of things that, you know, we've already talked about here. One of the things I think that, you know, that we have mentioned throughout the course of the week leading into this matchup has to do with the fact that Miami has been the very difficult place for the team to play. I mentioned this number yesterday. I will repeat it here again today because I think it has some significance. In the months of September and October, when the Patriots have played in Miami, earlier in the season. Since 1971, they are a ringing 1-13. So that number is probably, because it's so definitive, it's probably made its way into the pregame festivities down the hallway here. Overall, New England is 10-32 in Miami. Tom Brady is a mere 2-4 in Miami, one of the few places he's got a losing record. Of course, last year, how soon we forget, right? Last year, the Dolphins' defense sacked Tom 4 times. And just 78 yards passing is what they held Brady to last year in winning 21-0. That has been a topic of conversation even in Coach Belichick's news conferences here this week. I mean, that was as dominating performance against New England as anybody had last year against the Patriots. And so now the Patriots are going back down there again this year, largely playing the same team. Been a few changes. One for the better, I think, in adding Joey Porter to the linebacking core. Certainly been some changes, maybe not so much to the better in the secondary. But you also still have Zach Thomas in the middle and Jason Taylor on the end. Where has the change been? And this is a team that shut out the Patriots. Now, granted, the Patriots have added, you know, some pretty decent pieces to the puzzle wide receiver-wise. Obviously, that's the case. But, you know, I would think that the Dolphins would feel relatively certain that they can play with the Pats if you have to look at it from Miami's point of view. And the Patriots, I would think, would be sufficiently motivated to go down there and sort of put the bad taste out of their mouths from a year ago. Of course, the Patriots didn't lose again after that game in Miami until the AFC Championship game. You know, the loss to the Colts. So that sort of served as, I think, a little bit of an impetus for the remainder of the season last year, as disappointing as it was. And that 21-0 game a year ago seems like it was years ago. I mean, and I think it's probably because of how far the Patriots as a football team have come themselves. Light years. But I bring it up because, again, it just kind of falls into the realm of, you know, be careful. Be careful. You'd have to say that this week the old adage of on any given Sunday would be tested, because I think it certainly seems to be that. And it seems to me, as I kind of, you know, run this over in my head again and again, I'm trying to find reasons, you know, to not take the Patriots. And I can't come up with one. The one that I keep coming back to is the fact that they have a miserable record overall in Miami. But when you take the relative, strengths of the two teams going into this particular game, and myself, I've even said, hey, whatever happened a year ago has no definitive bearing on what happens this year. So I have to keep reminding myself of that because it's true. What happened in last year's game has no bearing whatsoever on this year's game. None. Other than mentally speaking, it might serve as a little motivating factor for the Patriots. And it could serve, I guess, as a little bit of a confidence factor for those who played in Miami who were around last year, knowing that, hey, you know what, we've always played these guys pretty well. We got nothing to lose. Let's just pin our ears back and let's go hit somebody. And that's where I think the Patriots will find, if they find any trouble at all, that's where I think they'll find their most trouble on Sunday, is they'll go up against a Miami team that just has absolutely nothing to lose. You know, they're going to play some younger wide receivers now that they've traded Chris Chambers away. You're going to see Ted Ginn get back, you know, get in there and play a little bit more and conceivably get the reps. You'll also see Derek Hagan, that's who I'm trying to think of. Derek Hagan in there and probably get more reps. So, you know, what do those guys have to lose? They have nothing to lose. They don't have the experience. They don't have, you know, the overall knowledge to know really what perhaps awaits them. And then when it comes right down to it, you look at the flip side of it again and you wonder how a team, even though Ronnie Brown has been the one real bright spot offensively for Miami this year, and that's what we were told yesterday here in the program, but quite frankly, a team that's quarterbacked by Cleo Lemon doesn't have one of its best targets at wideout, doesn't have, a guy like Randy McMichael around anymore. I mean, you wonder how they have the offensive weapons to move on New England's defense. You know, they've averaged, what, 18 points per game, I guess it is, in their first six games? That's no great shakes. They've been sort of pedestrian on offense. I think they've averaged 320 and change per game yardage-wise, but scoring-wise, they really haven't cashed in. So, I guess, and then as I've kind of presented both sides of the story here to you, that does lead us to our normal Thursday question of the week. Predict the final score. Send us the email and tell us what you think the final score will be in Sunday's matchup. I'm not going to ask you to tell me where you think the difference in the game will be because, quite frankly, I think we all realize that it would take a real fluke for the outcome of this game to turn out any differently. But then again, when we say that, you just never know. That's the one thing that just keeps me from thinking lock, stock, and barrel on this thing. Because you just really never know in the NFL from week to week. This may be as close to a sure thing as we've seen in some time as far as the Patriots are concerned on Sunday. And yet, when you think like that, that's usually when you get burnt. That's usually when it happens. When you got everything going in one direction, both physically and mentally, and then boom, team surprises you. And it's because of the parity and everybody being physically of an equal caliber in the NFL. And, of course, the dominant team makes some mistakes and allows the team to stay in the game, and then the team that's the weaker team has a chance to steal it at the end. And you don't want that to happen. Patriots have to come right in there, smack them in the mouth early, get up by a couple of scores, and then just hopefully get out of Dodge, like I said, without any major damage. 17-point road favorite. I can't recall that ever happening. And I'm sure there are going to be other occasions this year when we see something, that's this outlandish, and we'll say, when was the last time this happened? We'll have to think, oh, it happened earlier this year. I'm going to go, because I do respect Miami's defense. And I do think that those guys are consummate professionals. I think Jason Taylor and Zach Thomas have been preeminent players, if not dominant players, at their positions. And I'm gonna give them a little bit of the benefit of the doubt here, just because Miami has always been a tough place for the Patriots to play. And I'm going to say that the Patriots win this game by a score. I'm gonna go with the 38 figure again, especially since it's a divisional opponent. I'm going to say the Patriots win this game 38-17. Doesn't sound like anything huge. Doesn't that sound like anything outlandish? I'm not sure how the Dolphins are going to score 17 points. I think I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt. Maybe a turnover. Maybe, who knows, something. I'm going to say 38-17. So the Patriots I have covering, but I'm going to say that it could be a game that is a one-score game in the third quarter. Patriots, I'm going to say, could be up, say, 17-10 in the third quarter, something along those lines before they, score again to start pulling away at the end. That's what I think. That's a certainly a believable scenario. So I want you to send me your score. webradio@patriots.com. Predict the outcome for Sunday's game. If you have any other topics of discussion on your agenda, if you too, like Jonas, are really tired of me rehashing old emails, by all means, please complain away. I'm ready for it today. 508-543-7482. That's the telephone number. So we would love for you to contribute to the program. Here's one from David from the Philippines. It says, John, historically, I think one of the reasons that we haven't done well in Miami is that the weather in early season games can be deadly hot, which could be hard for a New England-based team to deal with. The forecast for this week, however, has projected highs of only 86 with possible rain. That shouldn't be bad enough to influence the game much. I could easily see the Pats beating the spread. I just don't see Miami having enough talent to keep up with us. Maybe next year. Dave, I think your assessment is right on. 86 is, that's no great shakes for Miami. Rain in the forecast, yes. I would tell you that I think rain is an equalizer. I think if it does rain and creates a slick turf, I think that brings the Patriots down closer to a level of the Dolphins. Anytime that the teams are playing on equal footing like that, and usually weather conditions have a way of balancing things out between teams. It usually takes away a team's overt strength. I would say that if it does rain, then I would say the Patriots might have a tougher time than normal. And it's not because rain would, you know, make the ball slick and maybe perhaps uncatchable. It seems to also help and hurt the other team as well. Balls seemingly have a way of slipping around when rain comes in and plays a factor, or snow comes in and plays a factor. And, I would be a little nervous about weather conditions. I don't know that the Patriots would be nervous. I mean, you want to have a predominantly strong running game when weather conditions are usually harsh. The Patriots have done pretty well running the football, even in light of the fact that Maroney's missed 3 weeks, and now we may be without Sammy Morris for a few more weeks after this. With all due respect to Kevin Falk and Kyle Eckel and Heath Evans, if this would be a game where I think the Patriots could really use Lawrence Maroney, because if it is slick out there, I think I could see the Patriots trying to run right at him. I definitely think I could see that. But you're right, Dave, in terms of the weather conditions in the past have long had a lot to do with a Patriots team that sort of caught, on its heels a bit, because the Dolphins are used to it. The Patriots are not. Part of the reason why I think they're probably doing some practicing indoors this week and also, trying to turn up the heat a little bit. And he says, Pats 35, Miami 13. The Fish need to get at least one turnover to get that much. I was going to say 38 points, but you took that already. It's all right. 38's all open for anybody. As long as you want it, you can go get it. That's pretty good. So your emails are welcome. Webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482. Give us your scores, give us your thoughts on the game, and we'll kind of move on from there. Again, coming up in just a few minutes, we'll have Patriots head coach Bill Belichick from earlier today. Russell Baxter from ESPN will join us at about 2:45 Eastern, and then we'll have Patriots locker room interviews coming up for you in the second hour of our program. We'll sneak in a break here. We'll come back and continue with more right here inside the playbook.
Playoff action is back in Foxborough. Once again, your New England Revolution have advanced to the MLS playoffs and are looking for a return trip to MLS Cup.
Drive the forum, and the goal! 1-0 Rams! What a huge tally for New England!
Saturday, November 3rd at 7:30 p.m., Taylor Twellman, Pat Noonan, Matt Reese, and the rest of the Revs take to the field in Foxborough, and they want you there to cheer them on to victory.
Takes a touch and buries it! 1-0 Rams! The sellout crowd in Foxborough rises to their feet!
Individual tickets start at just $18, and significant discounts are available for groups of 20 or more. Bring your family or group, and don't miss a minute of this exciting playoff match at Gillette Stadium. Call the Revolution Ticket Office today at 1-877-GET-REVS. That's 1-877-GET-REVS to get your playoff ticks.
Get your kicks.
And get the Revolution.
The New England Revolution.
This is Richard Seymour. If you're a big Patriots fan, show your team pride and win great prizes by ordering your Patriot Specialty License Plate. Team Rules says your car has to be registered in Massachusetts to be eligible. When you place your order, you have the chance to win Patriots tickets and memorabilia. Proceeds from the sales of the license plates go to the New England Patriots Charitable Foundation. Now that's worth driving for. To score your new set, apply online or in person at your local RMV or log on to Patriots.com for more details. Show your team spirit, give to a great cause, and get your Patriots License Plate today.
When you got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Miles and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
So do you think that would be a good thing for the bye week to play a little match game here? I think that would be great. I think we'll get emailers, or we'll have to give callers or somebody a chance to kind of go against each other. We got to figure out how we can do that here.
Patriots-themed questions?
Sure. Why not? I think that'd be a great idea. I'm also going to bring in some of the top students from my sports radio class at Emerson College the week of the bye week and let
Boring.
Them come in. And No. These guys are good. These kids are on their game, and they're going to come in and join me for a day or two that week. A couple of the better kids in the class who aspire to be talk show hosts. And this is going to be kind of a test for them, if you will. But they're going to come in and co-host with me over a day or two. And I think you'll find it kind of interesting to get some fresher perspective from the, shall I say, dare I say, younger generation. I think it'll be kind of fun, actually. So that's going to happen on the bye week. And, yes, we'll definitely come up with some Patriots-themed questions. And we're going to let you, and we're going to play a match game style. We just got to figure out, though, Gary, I guess we could do it by email, since with the phone lines here, it's always a sort of a hit-or-miss proposition. We could do it by email, and then just whoever sends the email answer first is going to have the correct answer, right? I suppose. Although there's, to play match game, what we'll have to have the contestants do, I'm just kind of thinking out loud here off the top of the head, the contestants have to answer it in the form, with the blank. And then I guess our panel would be, yeah, the two of us and our, no, I'm Gene Rayburn. I can't be on the panel. I'm Gene. Oh, we'll let the kids from my sports radio class, we'll let them be the panelists as well. We got to have at least 3 or 4 panelists, too. So that'll work.
It'll be like Coach Belichick is so smart.
How smart is he?
When the media asked him about the videotape, he said,
blank. Something along those lines.
It is what it is.
That would be a good question. That would be a good answer by you. So we'll see if we can't pull that off. We'll have some fun. So we'll look forward to that during the bye week here. Maybe we'll just play a game show every day that week. We can play match game one day, and then we can play dead or alive another day. That's always a good favorite. That was an old Eddie Annelman favorite. Yeah, we can put the prices right. Do we have any prizes to give away? That's what I thought. Rod Roddy, tell him what he's won. No. Drew Carey, can you, do you think he was an appropriate...
3-4!
Yeah, Cleveland rocks, I know.
3-4!
Is he an appropriate replacement for Bob Barker, you think?
I think he's a good one.
Yeah, I think he'd be pretty good.
And they'll probably say some controversial stuff with the Barker's beauties.
I like Whose Line Is It Anyway when he does that show. I actually get a big kick out of that one, so... Anyway, that's coming up in a couple of weeks. We're getting way ahead of ourselves, but hey, that's what we do here, and we do it quite often here inside the program. Web radio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482. This email comes from John, who says, please address the statement made by Patrick Creighton from Dallas, saying the Pats defense is not for real. I did see some inconsistencies that could really hurt us as the season progresses. They are. The middle of our defense is exposed big time. Good tight ends and receivers over the middle will exploit us. Indy for sure. I'll go this one at a time. Middle of our defense exposed big time. Well, I don't know that I can say that. I think with Rodney Harrison back in the fold, that I think that takes away a lot of whatever it is you see as the middle of the defense being exposed. Because a good tight end is going to go over the middle, and that's going to be a guy that Harrison is obviously going to sort of shadow or mark. I also think that there's an opportunity, if you're getting pressure from other areas, to bring Adalis Thomas back into coverage, as they did early in the season, and we saw him return that touchdown, interception for a touchdown. Good tight ends, receivers over the middle are always going to get yards. Question is can this Patriots defense find a way to bend but not break as they did earlier in the season when opponents went 6 for their first 6 opportunities in the red zone? All right, number 2, the pass rush has been good to terrible. I did not see a lot of pressure on the quarterback of the Dallas game. We need to get after quarterbacks more. Well, you always need to get after quarterbacks more, but the thing that made it less of a factor in Dallas is the fact that Romo is very light on his feet. He's quick out of the pocket. And quarterbacks with any kind of quickness, if you allow them to get out of the pocket, you're not going to be able to get to them. Problem is, the Patriots have to structure the rush where they force the quarterback to stay in the pocket. Then, of course, you don't want to get beat when he steps up into the middle of the pocket and throws deep down the field. But I think you need to hem good quarterbacks in. So I think that has a lot to do with the lack of a perceived pass rush, although they did get to him a couple of times during the game. And then our linebackers are big and tough. We are old and slow, hence the middle of the defense being suspect. I would also include the edge of the line. Well, that if you really want to nitpick, John, I think that would be the one area that you could probably nitpick. I mean, you got the fact that, you know, Vrabel and Bruschi are getting up there in age a little bit. It's hard for me to put the old and slow moniker on a guy like Roosevelt Colvin and Adalys Thomas. I don't find that appropriate at all. I think, you know, maybe half of the defense you could say that to. Certainly Junior Seau, you could say that. But then again, here's Seau, who's, you know, three interceptions in the last 2 weeks. So I'm not sure that I'm buying that argument. I think that's a common misperception at this stage of the game. You know, whatever they're doing well enough to where that really isn't a viable argument at this stage of the game. This one comes from Indianapolis. Wouldn't it be a good idea to activate Seymour sometime before the Colts game in a couple of weeks, even if he isn't ready to go? I think wasting one roster spot on him would be worth it, if only to force the Colts to devote some time to him during practice during the week leading up to the game. Of course, if Seymour is ready to go by then, this is a moot point. But if he isn't, do you think creating the impression that he is healed will create a good strategic edge? I'm sure that that thought, if there's anything to creating strategic edges, we know that the Patriots and Bill Belichick are capable of doing that. But this Patriots defense is deep enough to the point, and they obviously they're number two overall in yards allowed right now in the NFL defensively. So have they missed Richard Seymour? You'd have to say no. So honestly, I don't think that they need to create a strategic edge here, whether it creates one or not. I think the Patriots are kind of past that. It's going to be kind of like, you know, hey, it is what it is. And you're going to find the guys go at him with what they have. I mean, if he's able to play, I think you'll see him there playing. But, you know, if he's still borderline, I think they're going to milk, you know, the entire time on the PUP that they can before they are forced to make a decision. And they're forced to either, A, put him on the roster, or B, put him on IR for the year. But the Patriots are in a position where they have a real luxury that a lot of teams just don't have. A lot of teams who don't have the depth, or a lot of teams who don't have, you know, the type of player like a Richard Seymour is, would be doing anything they could to get him back onto the field as quickly as possible. Patriots have the luxury of time on their side right now. This one comes from Christian in Boston. After watching NFL replay last night, I paid more attention to Roy Williams. God, he's awful. Other than being a big hitter, what's the fascination with this guy? Also, Harrison is definitely a step slower. On the slow-motion replays, you could really see it. I hear that common criticism of Roy Williams of Dallas all the time, and the fact that he's a step slow or a big hitter and then a step slow, I think, is the common denominator there, but frankly, they don't need him to cover as much. And so, you know, being a safety, I think that's what they want him there for. They want him there to, you know, create a physical presence a la Rodney Harrison. As far as Harrison being a step slower, I'm going to reserve judgment on that one until I have a chance to see him play a little bit more and let him kind of get back into, you know, his own midseason shape, which may still be a couple of weeks away. RJ in Vegas says, do you think we'll see John Beck this week? If the Dolphins are now officially in a rebuilding mode and the players aren't going to be playing very hard for the rest of the season, will they put him in to see what he can do or wait until later in the season? I'd rather watch a rookie than Cleo Lemon. Well, actually, if you look at it from a Miami perspective and you're a Dolphin fan, I would probably want to see John Beck. I mean, the season's gone at 0-6. Cleo Lemon has been nothing more than a backup. Although last week he did throw for, what, 256 against the Browns in a losing cause. They put 31 points up on the board. He did throw a couple of picks. But, you know, Lemon is certainly mobile. I mean, who gives your team the best chance to win? I mean, and why would you want to take John Beck and throw him to the Wolves or the Lions or to the Patriots, as the case may be this week? I don't know that you want to do that. You might want to play Beck a little bit later on. Certainly, if the game gets out of hand early, then you might see them in there for a few series. But I don't know that you really want to throw Beck to the Wolves like that or to the Lions. I think you can shell shock a guy. And I think that the Dolphins will be very careful. But rest assured, if the season continues to go southward, I think they've got to see what they have in John Beck so they can kind of make an estimation of what to do about the quarterback spot before the draft. And he says, oh, by the way, that emailer who was talking about the volume on the podcast the other day, 100% accurate. I can hardly hear the podcast in my car at full volume once I get on the highway. If Ferreira could stop being such a chode about it, it would help us podcasters out greatly. Thank you for that one. We'll pass the message on. All right, let's get to Patriots head coach Bill Belichick. Ooh, the injury report already out for today? That's inordinately early. I'll go ahead and give it to you here. Not practicing today. Eric Alexander, knee. Sammy Morris, chest. Benjamin Watson, ankle. Limited participation in practice today. We had Randall Gay with his thigh, Maroney with his groin, Mel Mitchell groin. Well, so Mitchell at least is upgraded somewhat. Stephen Neal, shoulder. Dante Stallworth, knee. Adalys Thomas, ankle. Kelly Washington, hamstring. Full participation, Tom Brady. So there you go. By the way, the Dolphins out yesterday at practice were Trent Green, Vonnie Holiday, Zach Thomas, and Travaris Tillman. Although I read in some South Florida Miami reports today that they expect Thomas to play on Sunday. Limited participation for the Dolphins was David Martin, tight end with an ankle injury. But they do expect him to play. All right, we'll get Russell in here in a couple moments. We'll get to Coach Belichick coming up in just a little bit. This one comes to, I'm relieved to find the duel in Dallas on NFL replay last night and have just got through the first quarter of it. But when I watched the game highlights on HBO, they focused a camera on Big Bill when he pulled paperwork out of his socks. Luckily, it wasn't from any other places. When are they going to cover other coaches the same way or drop the whole surveillance thing? Well, first of all, I saw that on Inside the NFL on HBO last night. This is from Mike in Santa Clara. And I don't think they're going to drop it anytime soon, number one, just because of the notoriety of it all. Number two, because the Patriots are undefeated. There's naturally going to be cameras on the head coach of a team that's dominating teams, as the Patriots have done to this point in time. And he keeps, you know, notes and things like that, you know, in his socks, you know, in his shirt sleeve, in the pouch of his sweatshirt, I mean, all over the place. Since he didn't have a sweatshirt on last week, that's where he kept, you know, some of his stuff right there in the socks, along with, you know, the red flag that he throws out for replay challenges. It says, by the way, oh, here we go. Did the Cowgirl fans that promised to call in after the game really call back this week? Not to my knowledge, they didn't. Not to my knowledge. Andy in Vermont, do you really think this Patriots team will actually fall in a trap and against the Dolphins? Granted, they have played us tough in years past. They have really been bad. They just traded their best receiver. Zach Thomas has gotten old kind of fast. Taylor is still a good pass rusher. Trent Green is out for a while. Ronnie Brown is their best player on offense by far, but their strength always was defense, and that has not been good for the Finns this year. Well, let's see. Defensively, let's just take a look at it statistically speaking. They've given up 325 yards a game. That is 19th. 19th currently out of 32 teams in the NFL. On rush defense, they are next to last in the NFL. They've given up 168.5 yards on the ground. That's 31st out of 32 teams. Pass defense has been certainly respectable. They're third overall in pass defense, statistically, 183.7. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense there. Why do we have the Patriots listed as sixth but giving up less yardage? Somehow that's a misprint. But at least at 183.7, statistically speaking, they have done at least a better-than-average job at limiting teams offensively. So that sort of belies the fact we talk about how some of their inexperience in the secondary may have the Patriots licking their chops. And, of course, the fact that they're porous somewhat rush defense-wise, you'd think that, well, maybe the Patriots want to concentrate on running the football, and yet they may not be at full strength in running the football. Kind of adds up to sort of a perplexing situation. How would you game plan Miami? I think that's a really good question of the day. Rather than, you know, ask you the obvious, which is, all right, give us your score prediction for Sunday, which we all, you know, are pretty much in agreement here that the Patriots, you know, are going to and should be favored to win and are probably going to win this thing. Let's do this. How would you game plan for the Dolphins? How would you game plan for the Dolphins? What would you think that the Patriots need to do in order to take Miami out of the game as quickly as possible? We'll give you a chance to play Josh McDaniel for just a few minutes. We'll give you a chance here to kind of look at it and play Dean Pease and be the defensive coordinator as well. How would you game plan? How would you game plan? I'd be interested to know what you think. Webradio at Patriots.com, 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. But think about that for a second. Knowing that you're a 17-point road favorite, you're going into a place that you have really never had a lot of success in the past over. You know it's going to be hot. You know it'll be humid. It could even be rainy on Sunday. How would you game plan for that? Would you think run? Would you think pass? How would you go about it? Would you attack Cleo Lemon? Would you try to stop Ronnie Brown and just let somebody else beat you? I mean, I think that's as good a question as any this day.
Yoo-hoo, Baxter!
And with that, that means that our good friend Russell Baxter, the NFL research coordinator for ESPN, joined us here inside the playbook. How would you line up against the Miami Dolphins on Sunday, Russell, and try to ensure your team gets a win or at least gets out of South Florida without a lot of damage done?
Well, I probably go without a bag of popcorn first.
Indeed.
I think I would just continue to do what I'm doing. And, you know, the beauty of what the New England Patriots do is you can never tell what they're going to do. And, you know, I know that the hex of Miami, and it's not been the Patriots' favorite place to play, Tom Brady's favorite place to play, and so on. But I think things have changed a lot in Miami, even since last year. You know, it's interesting, John. The you know, when last the Patriots were in Miami, they lost 21-0. Well, the Patriots haven't lost a regular game since, and the Dolphins haven't won a regular season game since.
Yeah, that's true.
So a lot of things have changed, and I think the thing that's changed most in Miami is that defense. Once fearsome, once perplexing, now making Derek Anderson and other quarterbacks around the league look like all-stars every week. It's really quite a demise, and I'm not sure what's going on with the organization, but you saw a lot of noted faces leave in the offseason, either via cut, or via trade, or via free agency. You just saw Chris Chambers, arguably their best receiver, was just traded on Tuesday to the San Diego Chargers. Things are certainly different down in Miami.
Well, you know, I know they're trying to put up a brave front, but I asked this question yesterday, Dan Dierdorf was with us yesterday, and also had Harvey Green from the Dolphins yesterday on the show, and just said, do you think this is a sort of a waving of the white flag? And obviously Harvey didn't think so, but Dan Dierdorf was sort of along with those lines. It's kind of like, look, you know, it's not going to happen this year. We're already six games out. We're not going to make the playoffs. You know, we've lost our quarterback. We've got a good running back. You know, it's maybe time to see who really wants to play here and just sort of strip it down to the bare bones and try to build. But the problem is, in the NFL, you just don't have a lot of time to be patient. And I wonder how patient Miami ownership and fans will be with Cam Cameron.
You know, it's funny you said the waving of the white flag, because it wasn't all that long ago. Well, actually, we should say 1972, when it was the famous Dolphin fans who used to wave the white hanky.
Sure.
In the stands.
That's kind of what started it all, yeah.
And so on.
Right.
And, of course, that was 25 years ago now. And, you know, there's a lot of talk this year that, you know, about the Patriots and actually a lot of talk about the Dolphins. Will the Dolphins win a game this year? But, you know, I agree. I mean, they have to find out who's playing. It is kind of a lost season. I don't like saying that at any juncture and so on, and I don't believe they'll go winless, because I firmly believe it's harder to go winless in this league than it is undefeated.
I would agree with that.
A lot of people thought the Raiders were going to go winless last year, and all of a sudden they won two games in a row,
mm-hmm.
and they only got to 0-5. So let's see what happens. Miami has been able to at least move the ball, and Ronnie Brown has had a very, very good season to date and so on. It's just that their defense has been a big disappointment.
Well, but, I look at their schedule this far, and of their six losses, three of them were decided by one possession. I mean, in literally field goals. The opening game was the overtime loss at Washington. And then, of course, they lost a game to the Jets by a field goal, and they lost to the game Houston on a last-second field goal as well. So, I mean, you know, with a couple of exceptions here and there, this could be a 3-3 team. It can't be as bad as 0-6 would tell you you are.
Well, that's right. And, you know, what's funny is, the St. Louis Rams get less attention than the Miami Dolphins. And, you know, given all the injuries and all the things that have gone on with the Rams this year, John, they to me seem like more of a candidate to have a longer season than the Dolphins have.
Yeah.
I mean, their offensive line has been different just about every week. You know, they lost the quarterback for a couple games. Their all-pro Pro Bowl running back. Isaac Bruce has been banged up. Their defense is not very good, and wasn't very good last year. So it's funny. It's I hear so much about Miami, and yet to me, St. Louis has actually been more inept, but for different reasons. And it's ironic because if both the Dolphins and the Rams lose this week at 0-7, it would be the worst start in the history of both their franchises.
Mm-hmm.
The Dolphins, of course, only go back to 1966 as an expansion team in the AFL. But when you talk about the Rams, you're talking about 70 years back to the Cleveland Rams in 1937. So both of them on the precipices of doing something historic. Of course, if Miami loses, that means New England wins, and the Patriots would do something historic. They've never been 7-0 in their team history.
Right. Well, the common theme and thread, I guess, going into this game is that Miami has never been a place where the Patriots have fared well. In fact, they're 2-5 since Bill Belichick became coach here in New England. They're 1-13 in Miami since 1971 when they're playing the Dolphins during either September or October. In other words, the early in the season, you know, heat a factor type of game. 1-13. Tom Brady, 2-4. Overall against the Dolphins, one of the few teams he hasn't had a whole lot of success against, and the fact that this team lost 21-0 last year, held Brady to 78 yards in passing in that game, and of course that was the last game they lost before the AFC Championship loss. So, I mean, you know, you take a look at it and you say, how could the Patriots be, honestly, a 17-point favorite? And I, you know, without having watched the Dolphins for an entire game yet this year, I'm kind of relying on others who have seen a little bit more of the Dolphins to say, how does this happen?
Well, I think it's been more, I think that the surprise, John, has been defensively. And if you, I think why people are thinking that the Miami is such an underdog here is because it has been the defense that has confounded the, even the games that New England won in Miami and even the games they won up in New England. This is a team that has given them problems with that defense. And I think the fact that the defense has fallen off is why there's that case for alarm in the case of, you know, people thinking that Tom Brady could have his way against his team. I mean, you're looking, I mean, the Jets have won one game this year. They scored 31 points against. Last week, the Browns scored 41. Cowboys scored 37 on the board against them. So this is a team that's not stopping anyone. There's no potent pass rush. Jason Taylor was a defensive player of the year last year. And he hasn't been the same factor. He's been good. I mean, very good. Zach Thomas has been banged up, and they've been riddled against the run. I mean, the Raiders went in there and ran for almost 300 yards against them, and Dante Culpepper ran for 3 touchdowns. So that's the cause of concern. It is Miami. It's just a different version of Miami, and it's an unlikely version of Miami because you're always thinking defense with them. That's been the steady rock for them for 8 or 9 years, even though they haven't been to the playoffs since 2001. But that rock is certainly wilted.
Here's a couple of numbers for you. I know you probably come across these, but the Patriots have never scored more than 19 points in a game at Miami in October.
Well, that's kind of interesting.
How about that one?
But I seem to recall the week they did might have been an overtime Troy Brown touchdown pass from Tom Brady in 2003. I think that was a 1913 game.
Yes, it was.
So if you were going to only score 19 points, you did it very economically that day.
Very, very true. And one more for you. You're probably more aware of this one. Tom Brady, 31-8 in his career as a starter in regular season division games. 5 of those losses are to the Dolphins.
Yeah, I mean, you go back to the Patriots, including the playoffs, 26-7 in their last 33 divisional games, 4 of the 7 losses to Miami. Yeah, so that's what you're up against. Because, you know, one of those Miami wins, by the way, not in Miami, the one in New England was, of course, the game at the end of the season where Brady came out. And Miami won up in New England when they were on that roll at the end of the year in 2005. The famous or infamous drop kick game with Doug Flutie. So, I mean, that's a Miami win, but it really wasn't the story of what was going on that year with Miami. So, I mean, the Dolphins, you know, finished 9-7 and the game behind the Patriots, who were 10-6. But that was kind of a deceptive win. It's kind of a deceptive win. But there's no doubt that they have had trouble with Miami's defense. There's no trouble whatsoever. My whole point along here is, is this the same defense that we have seen in recent years? And it looks like a candy-coated shell of its former self.
Yeah, no doubt. You think also maybe, and someone else, even an emailer bring this up earlier, you think that it's getting a little long in the tooth? In other words, Zach Thomas, Taylor.
Yeah. There's no question about it. I mean, you know, Zach Thomas was drafted the same year as Teddy Bruschi was. You know, Jason Taylor's been around quite a few years. They've used assorted veterans. They've not. This is not a team that is drafted overly well. Traded away their draft picks. You know, dealt them for quarterbacks and so on. They have not restocked the cabinet here in the very least. And you know, you've got to have young talent to supplement what you do. And if you don't replace that talent, you can't just keep on patching things with free agency and trades. It doesn't work that way. If it worked that way, the Redskins would be a dynasty.
True.
And let's. And I know we'll get to this in a second here, but when you do get a good football player, I mean a really good football player, a guy who can catch passes, and in a pinch, kick field goals, return punts, return kickoffs, do everything you ask him to do, and you trade him to a division rival for a second-round draft pick, maybe not the smartest thing you've ever done. And that'll be interesting when we see Mr. Wes Welker return to Miami this weekend. And I find it interesting because this is a Dolphin team that needs help in so many different areas. And it's just I find it mind-boggling that they made a trade like that within the division and got a guy who has been a nemesis for the Patriots for the 3 years. And by the way, a rookie free agent find in Wes Welker. So it wasn't even like they wasted a draft pick on him.
Right.
Or got him a draft pick. They found him, you know, they found a diamond in the rough. And I know a second-round pick is a second-round pick, but they wound up trading him into a division. And you think Wes Welker's had an impact in New England so far this year?
Just a little one.
Yeah.
Just a little one. All right, well, we kind of started talking about the Patriots and Dolphins, and maybe we'll come back to that in a minute, but I think, quite frankly, we maybe talked out about that one already. In the division, the second-place Buffalo Bills, they're at home, and they've got the Baltimore Ravens, and I wonder if Baltimore's defense will plan on trying to attack Trent Edwards and see if they can't get the Bills out of a comfort zone. Let's keep in mind now, Buffalo should have beaten Dallas at home a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, and, you know, this is a pretty feisty Buffalo team. They've had a couple weeks to get over that loss. You know, they've had a lot of things go wrong up in Buffalo this year. You go back to the Kevin Everett situation. So, you know, it's been a heavy-hearted year for them. They now have a new quarterback in Trent Edwards, who, you know, I think it's too early to read in the fact that he's going to be the ultimate replacement for J.P. Lossman, but he is at least this week and maybe for a couple of future weeks. I think they want to wait and see what he's capable of and so on. More importantly, it's the return of Willis McGahee to the Buffalo area.
True.
And it sounds like he won't be visiting an Applebee's or a TGI Fridays or a Dave & Buster's anytime soon. You know, Baltimore comes up here. I know they're 4-2. I think their defense is another team that's a little long in the tooth. They have had trouble in the fourth quarter. The Rams game last week, forget that. The Rams have no offensive line. They've had some problems in the fourth quarter this year. They've still managed to win four games. They've had their own turnover problems. Kyle Bowler's going to start this week. I think it's going to be an unhappy return for Willis McGahee and the Ravens, and I like the Bills to pull a little mini surprise over the Ravens this week.
Wow, that would be a little bit of a surprise. The Jets are playing at Cincinnati, and you're talking about two teams that had such high hopes coming into the season that have just completely fallen flat on their you-know-whats. Jets 1-5, Cincinnati 1-4. Is it still conceivable that the survivor, not winner here, the survivor of this game can turn their season around in time?
Well, I don't know if the Jets can win if they are still capable of surviving. I mean, they're 1-5 compared to 1-4 and so on. But this is a game that I think would be better suited for an election year because it really concerns itself with a bunch of Chads. One Chad who is struggling and another Chad who is struggling in a different way.
Yeah,
and, of
right.
course, we're talking about Chad Pennington, who's been the target of every criticism known to man in the New York area because he hasn't played well, opposed to Chad Johnson, who is – you know, quickly gone from being this kind of lovable, fun-loving guy to, it seems like, rubbing people the wrong way. And I don't know if it started with the Hall of Fame jacket in week one or the fact that they just haven't won. But you saw him jawing with Marvin Lewis last week on the sidelines. A couple weeks ago when they lost to New England on Monday, you saw him jawing with Carson Palmer. It's the game of hanging chads. And I think Cincinnati, if they win, has a better shot just based on math. But both of these teams have dug themselves a very, very big hole.
Yeah. Yeah, they most definitely have. I am stunned though that in particular the Cincinnati Bengals, where you know the thought process was that that was a team. In fact, even before the week leading up to the game that the Patriots played in Cincinnati, that this was a team that was eminently capable of beating anybody in any given day, and the powerful offense, and we haven't seen anything. And I wonder if it's just because the defense has been so bad, it's just sort of overwhelmed almost the entire roster.
Well, I think there's a couple things here going, John. I think it's the fact that they haven't had Rudy Johnson, who's one of the more reliable backs in this league. I think it's the fact that it's an offensive line that's gotten a little banged up the last few years. It had its issues last year. It still has its issues this year. And it's lost one of its better guys to free agency in Eric Steinbach, who went to Cleveland in this offseason. I think they lost a little attitude there as well. A lot of things seem to be amiss in Cincinnati right now. They were a very, very big favorite, I think. Well, not a very big favorite, but I'd say respectable favorite to get back to the playoffs and or win the AFC North this year.
Mm-hmm.
And they look disinterested, for lack of a better word. They have played good football at times, but they haven't played consistent football until they put a consistent effort together. And they learn how to play defense without relying on taking away the football. They're going to be a team in trouble. You know, they have 12 takeaways this year,
yeah.
6 in the win over the Ravens,
right.
And 6 in the 4 losses.
Jeez.
That's not the kind of balance you're looking for.
No, I would say not. I would say not. All right, so that's the rest of the division, obviously, with the Pats playing the Miami Dolphins. Honestly, Russell, as I look at the schedule this week, there aren't too many games that really catch my eye. I'm going to save what I think is the best for last, which is your game on Monday night, the ESPN game. But before we get to that one with a little bit of intrigue has Minnesota playing at Dallas, the Cowboys home again for second straight week. They've got to bounce back after getting slapped by the Patriots, and they got to figure out a way to slow down Adrian Peterson.
Yeah, they do. And this is always a dangerous game when you are coming off an emotional game, then you're playing at home, and then you're playing against an opponent you're quote-unquote expected to beat. And yet this opponent is coming off a very, very emotional win on the road, and they're going on the road again. And I think this is a very, very tricky spot for Dallas. Their defense had its problems last week, not necessarily against the run, but they certainly did against the pass and so on. But this is no ordinary runner. I think that's pretty obvious. And he can not only hurt you on the ground, he's obviously going to hurt you on kickoff returns as well. He was a major, major factor in a game last week. I think he wound up with 361 combined yards.
Yeah, he was pretty amazing.
In the win over the Bears.
Pretty amazing.
Right, 224 on the ground. And the setup, the key kickoff return at the end that set up the game-winning field goal. It's too early to be naming rookies of the year, but he's going, no rookie. I mean, they've had some good players, including Chuck Foreman and other backs. No rookie has ever run for 1,000 yards in the history of the Minnesota Vikings. And it seems that Adrian Peterson might crawl his way there. Over 600 already,
mm-hmm.
in 5 games off the 224, which is one of the highest totals by a rookie in history. I will not be surprised. I know it, craziness. Not be surprised if Minnesota somehow finds a way to squeak this one out.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. I wouldn't be surprised to see it happen, although I think the Dallas will rebound, but I won't be stunned if the
going to be
Vikings
harder than it looks. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, the Vikings will make it an interesting game.
Yeah.
There's also a game involving Minnesota's division foes, Tampa Bay playing at Detroit. Which Detroit team is going to show up? Now,
you mean the one that gives up 90 points in their 2 losses?
Yeah, the one that dominates because they're 2-0 at home. Which one is it going to be?
Isn't it hard to tell? I mean, I think there's a reason this team won only 3 games last year. I know they won already 3 games this year, but their 2 losses, 56-21, 34-3.
Pretty ugly.
Non-competitive,
yeah.
To a degree, especially the Eagles game where they gave up 42 points in the first half. Tampa Bay, despite the fact that they have no running backs, although they signed Zach Crockett a week ago and then just traded for Michael Bennett while they watch everybody else go down, just keeps getting it done because Jeff Garcia isn't turning over the football, and they're getting some nice contributions from young defensive players. We know about Rondé Barber. We know about Derek Brooks, but Barrett Rood, the rookie safety, Tanner Jackson, a lot of pop in him. These guys are making plays. Last week, you know, I know Vince Young got hurt in the game, but they still managed to stifle Tennessee on the ground, did a terrific job. And then Joey Galloway, who Robbie reminds me of Darryl Green in this sense. I know they play different positions, but to quote Chris Merman, some guys come into the league fast and they go out of the league fast. And Joey Galloway was fast when he came in 1995, and he's still pretty damn quick as he plays in 2007.
Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned Vince Young, and the Titans play at Houston, so he gets a chance to go home this week. If, of course, he's healthy enough to play, do you think he will?
You know, it's a hard call. I actually heard Jeff Fisher on with an interview with Mike Tirico yesterday, I think it was.
Right.
And he made the point that you know, while he doesn't like to start guys or play guys who don't practice all week, the fact that they are playing Houston and a divisional foe who they have a pretty good book on makes it a little easier for Vince's prep time. And it's one of those injuries, a quad, where it requires nothing but rest. Mm-hmm. There's nothing really, no rehab to do with it and so on. So I won't be surprised if he plays. If I had to guess right now, I'm going to guess he doesn't play. Both these teams have struggled to run the football the last couple of weeks. That's what made Houston off 2-0. That's what made Tennessee off to their good start as well. Mott Schaub will find some holes in the Tennessee defense because Tennessee's defense, although it's very good, can be burned by the big play, witness Joey Galloway last week. You don't want to say, well, team win or lose if the other quarterback doesn't play. But Vince does so much for that Tennessee offense and really dictates what they do. I guess that's what I'll probably say. If Vince Young isn't available, I think Houston wins this game.
Mm-hmm.
And they've had a lot of trouble with Tennessee since they came in the league. They've lost 8 of the 10 times they've played each other. But
wow.
This is a very, very pivotal game because, you know, we're going to see the other two teams in the division play on Monday night. And, you know, it's one of these teams keeps winning. They just keep their head above water. They can keep themselves within the playoff race in the AFC.
We'll get to that Monday night game here in just a sec. The Patriots next week have Washington here at Gillette. The Redskins are home this weekend taking on the Arizona Cardinals and matchup of a couple of teams that if they win, you know, within the confines of their division, they're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, and especially the Cardinals who lost. In fact, the only team that didn't lose last week in the NFC West was San Francisco. And it's nice when you can pick up a half a game because you don't play. But the Cardinals, Seahawks, and Rams all lost. It seems like it's kind of a three-team race anyway because
mm-hmm.
the Rams are sitting at 0-6. But the Cardinals and Seahawks are both 3-3 and tied. Arizona's defense, you can tell it's got a lot more attitude than it has in past years. But they're going to be starting, looks like, Tim Rattay. So they'll be going with their third quarterback, third starting quarterback in three games. Washington, Jason Campbell, I think, continues to impress. It's a heartbreaking loss at Green Bay last week. I just think Washington's got a little too much muscle on the offensive line for this Arizona team, and they've gotten their pass rush back. I think the Redskins have 15 sacks this year. They only had 19 all of last year. They have 8 takeaways. They only had 12 all of last year. They're playing a lot better defense. Their defense really didn't let them down last week, although the fact they probably dropped 3 or 4 Brett Favre interceptions. I kind of like the Redskins here.
Yep. There is a game that, you know, for old AFC/AFL foes and fans, Pittsburgh playing Denver on the Sunday night game certainly looks to be attractive, but I just wonder how good or how bad Denver really is and whether or not this is an accurate test for Pittsburgh.
Well, Denver's defense has completely lost its ability to stop the run. And I, you know, kidding around with Tom Jackson this morning as we were talking, the Denver Broncos have given up 938 yards rushing in 5 games.
Okay.
I said to Tommy, I said, you played 14 years, you guys didn't give up 938
yards.
Yeah,
I was about to say. Yeah, no kidding. That's
938, they've given up, 184 straight weeks.
Mm-hmm.
They've had 2 weeks to try to fix what's going on. Jay Cutler's made some untimely throws, but it's really been the defense, which can't rush the passer and can't stop the run. Now, if Pittsburgh, I think, comes out and tries to throw the ball on Denver, they could get themselves in trouble. And let me tell you something, people, about stats. If you read right now, the Broncos have the 32nd ranked rush defense. They have the number one ranked pass defense. There's an adage, why fly when you can drive? The reason they have the number one ranked pass defense is because they have the 32nd ranked rush defense. Okay, teams are running on them. The rankings are based on yards. Okay, so why bother to throw the ball when you can run with great success?
Sure.
And we've seen, you know, even in games early in the season when Denver was beating Buffalo and Oakland, we saw Oakland run all over them. And in these last three losses, Jacksonville manhandled them. And, of course, what San Diego did to them, 41-3 in Denver, was just stunning, absolutely stunning.
Well,
like I said, if Pittsburgh tries to come out and throw the ball, I think they get themselves in trouble. Pittsburgh runs the ball, but I think they've run it deceptively this year. They need to get back to a little more power football, and we shall see.
I go back to the old adage that Darrell Royal once said. There are two things that happen, or actually three things that can happen when you pass the football, and two of them are bad. And that should be Pittsburgh's moniker, I think, this week.
Yeah, yes. They can get themselves behind, which takes them out of the running game. And then it becomes a whole different ballgame.
Right. And, of course, that leads me into what I think is certainly the premier game of the week in the NFL schedule here in Week 7. It's the game that you guys have on ESPN's Monday Night Football with the Colts playing at Jacksonville. 5-0 Indy, 4-1 Jacksonville. Jaguars playing some pretty decent defense right now. The Colts seem to be the Colts, which is still pretty good.
Yeah, Jacksonville, which gave up 282 yards rushing, 282 in their opening game, has given up 200 combined in the last four. Mm. They've really buckled down. I give them a lot of credit. David Garrard hasn't thrown an interception yet this year. Been more careful with the football. They're starting to get even the passing game going with the running game of Fred Taylor and Maurice Jones-Drew. Their defense is very serious. And, of course, they also remember when the Colts came down to Jacksonville last year, 44-17. Jacksonville ran for 375 yards in that game. Obviously, the Colts are trying to keep pace, for lack of a better word, with New England as we await the next great game of the century, since we just finished the last great game of the century last week, which
yeah, we only
didn't
have
turn
to wait
out to be so great.
Only have to wait two more weeks.
Yeah, and try to go 6-0 for the third straight year, by the way, John, which only two other teams in NFL history have ever done that. They would be the third team. They just traditionally get off to these great starts. They also get a lot of people back this week. Remember that when they played Tampa Bay the last time we saw them, they didn't have Marvin Harrison. They didn't have Joseph Ajayi. They didn't have Bob Sanders, and they still wound up winning comfortably. They're executing very, very well. And I've said this for a couple of weeks. There's a little role reversal going on in the AFC. And follow me for a second, John.
Sure.
Right now, and it's very early in the season, okay, obviously. But right now, I'm going to flash back to 2004. And right now the Patriots look like the Colts of 2004. And the Colts look like the Patriots of 2004. The Patriots are putting all the points on the board and winning. The Colts are making the plays at the end of games and winning. Mm. And if you go back to that season, now of course, New England won the Super Bowl that year. They were a 14-2 team. Indy had a little midseason slump and so on. But Brady is putting up the Manning numbers. And the Colts are making plays against Vince Young and Matt Schaub at the end of games to preserve wins. It's kind of an interesting reversal of fortune. Now, I don't know how it's all going to turn out. But right now, it's just kind of interesting to watch them kind of mirror each other from 3 years ago. And with any luck, Indianapolis continues to win. New England continues to win. And we'll see one of the more, as far as record goes, one of the more celebrated games we're ever going to see if both these teams can remain undefeated. But let me just throw out one number about being 6-0.
Sure.
Because there's been a lot of talk, and I'm not trying to be a killjoy or anything, a lot of talk about the Patriots going undefeated. Obviously, it's a discussion that has come up everywhere.
It's come up once or twice.
Because it's been dominant. Yes, it has. I just want to remind people, the Patriots being 6-0, I'll ask you, John, any guesses at how many teams have opened or how many times a team has opened 6-0 dating back to the Super Bowl era?
How many times?
How many times it's happened 6-0?
Now, are you talking just 6-0 period or teams that went on to the Super
Bowl? 6-0 or better.
Probably just a handful. I'd say anywhere from like 3 to 5.
Okay. New England, this is the 45th time a team has opened 6-0 or better.
Overall?
In the Super Bowl era.
Really? That many?
Yes. And if Indianapolis wins, it'll be the 46th time. And my point is this. Once we, when we get to 8-0 and 10-0, then you're going to start to get in some rarefied air. But I just need everybody to just take it down a little notch. And so, and I remember a Rams team in 2000, I think, actually scored more points than the Patriots did in their 6-0 start, and they wound up winning, losing in the wild card. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but we haven't gotten really to the rarefied air yet. When we get to 8-0 and 9-0, I think that's when it's going to get exciting for either one of these teams, whoever it winds up being.
Mm-hmm.
Although, how fun would it be if they wind up tying in Week 9?
Oh, gosh.
That'll get everybody all in a tizzy,
wouldn't
it?
Yeah, you sure would, wouldn't
so
it?
On. So that's all. I'm not trying to be a killjoy and so on, but 6-0 happens a lot more than you think.
Yeah.
But when we get to 8-0 and 10-0, then you start talking about some serious, serious history.
Well, let me ask you this, then. The survivor of this game in a couple of weeks, then, do they have a legitimate chance to challenge the 72 Dolphins?
Well, I think once you get the head up of steam, I think you always can. And the one thing about, you know, here's what the New England Patriots have in their favor. They've won 21 games in a row before. They've proven they can do it. They hold the NFL record. Okay? They just didn't happen to do it all in one season. But they have proven they can win 21 games in a row, which no team has ever done. Okay? And the previous record was Miami with 18. Now, the thing is, you're going to need to win 19 to win the Super Bowl because that's what it takes now.
Mm-hmm.
There is not going to be if one of these teams is going to make history, it's not going to be the 17-0 Colts or 17-0 Patriots. It's going to have to be the 19-0 Colts or Patriots.
Right.
So it's obviously a little harder just based on the math and so on. But in New England's favor is knowing that they have achieved this before.
Sure. Ultimately, do you think Indianapolis wins this game Monday night?
Yeah, I think they find a way to win. I'm not going to be surprised if they lose, but I think they find a way to win. And that, for them, will give them a big, forget the big picture thing, it will give them a big leg up in the division, because if they do win Monday, they will have done something they did not do last year at all, and that is defeat each of their divisional opponents on the road. Last year, they lost all three of their divisional road games. People forget they lost, we already mentioned the Jacksonville loss, but they lost at Tennessee and lost at Houston. They've already beaten the Titans and the Texans on the road this year. They can win at Jacksonville, puts them in a tremendous position to win the AFC South once again.
Right. Russell, as always, great stuff. Great stuff. It's always good to talk to you. You made me look forward to the weekend. Not that I wouldn't look forward to the weekend anyway, but you know what I mean, right?
Well, there's a listen, to me, there's no, I know there is bad. To me, it's like golf.
Yeah.
Okay? You can shoot 112 on the front nine. Okay, but there's no such thing. Is there really?
If I shoot 112 on the front nine, I'm throwing my clubs away.
But is there really anything as a bad day of golf?
No.
To me, there's no such thing as a bad day of football. There's some bad football played, but there's no such thing as a bad day of football.
Now, in a couple of weeks leading into the bye week, you know, we're not going to take the week off here on the program. So I hope that you'll look forward to playing, you know, some good, solid match game type game shows with us here on the
I
program.
I was hoping you were going to pull out concentration.
We'll have to look for that one.
See,
now you
favorite.
Got Gary working. Concentration.
And I'm talking the Hugh Downs version, not the showing half the puzzle and giving it all away.
Yeah, so. I don't know that I would remember that theme song if we could even find it. I don't know.
I don't know if they had a theme song.
Did Concentration have one?
I don't think Hugh Downs is often associated with music.
No, he's not.
You know, Hugh Downs from 2020 was the Concentration.
And Barbara Walters, I know. Yeah. Shocking, isn't it?
Yes.
Thanks, Russell. Have a great weekend.
You too, John.
Talk to you next week. You got it. Russell Baxter, who is the NFL Research Coordinator for ESPN, and, of course, he's the guy that I've said this several times for those that may not know exactly who Russell is. He's the guy that feeds all the info, the stuff that we talk about here on the program, all the research that he does. He feeds all this to Boomer and to TJ and to the guys on the set and to, you know, to Rico and the guys in the Monday Night Football game. And, you know, he's the brains behind the brawn out on the field. So we appreciate Russell spending some time with us and with you here inside the playbook each and every Thursday here on Patriots.com radio. Let's go with webradio@patriots.com. That's the email address. We'll get to a few of them here. We asked you, you know, again, certainly on Thursday, we want you to predict the score of the game. But what I also want you to do today is tell me how you would game plan this thing. Okay? I mean, knowing that you've got an obvious task ahead of you, you've got more talent than the other guys, you're probably going to win this game, but how do you devise a plan when you go into a situation where you've really had a hard time winning before? It's liable to be muggy and hot, and maybe even a little rainy as well. And you put these two teams on paper, and you're overmatching them. What do you do first? How do you go about shutting down the Dolphins? How do you ensure the fact that you come out of Miami with a win? So you can play a little Josh McDaniels, if you will. You can play a little Dean Pease, if you will. How do you game plan for this one? You know, it sounds to me like it's not exactly a win-win scenario. It's a lose-lose scenario, but no matter what happens, you know, if you don't win impressively enough, well, then, oh, my gosh, what's wrong with the Patriots? You know, you're supposed to win, and you're supposed to win going away. How do you game plan? How do you guard against that? Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. Kenneth, who is one of our good emailers from Huntington Beach, California, says, it's definitely hard to imagine the Patriots not winning this weekend, but then it was also hard to imagine them not winning last December when they were shut out 21-0. I don't think the Patriots will lose this time, but if the team is 14-0 in Week 16, I do think that the Dolphins will be a team to watch out for because the Patriots will be coasting into the playoffs, and the Dolphins will have a preservation of the only preservation of the only undefeated team in history in mind. The only advantage for the Pats there is that the game is in Foxborough. He says for this weekend, Patriots 34, Dolphins 10. Ronnie Brown is a force to worry about, especially since the team struggled on some plays versus Barber and Jones last week. However, Dallas also happened to have a component to their offense.
I couldn't care less about the team struggling.
That Miami does not. Thank you, Joe, for chipping in. He was a little slow on the trigger there. Receivers and a quarterback. I'm going to keep pounding the point because when it happens, I want to be on record as saying it would have from the beginning. The biggest game of the year is not Pats versus Colts, as everyone says, and with a good reason. The biggest game of the year is Pats versus Steelers. I really believe that the Steelers are better than the Colts, and their defense is currently allowing less than 10 points per game. Hell, at the very least, we're talking about the Super Bowl winning teams of the past 3 years. At least we've gotten a few things to talk about between now and Indy. Miami usually wins in Miami, and Belichick has never beaten Washington. That's also a good point, which I'm sure we'll bring up next week. Question about the IR. What exactly does it take to qualify a player for IR? I'm sure there have to be rules. Otherwise, it's much too convenient a way to store players while developing them for a year or two. I guess I could throw a PUP question in there as well. Put 5 receivers on the active list, 2 on the PUP list, just in case you have injuries going through the year. Obviously, players want to play, and you want your best players on the field all the time, but what's to stop a team from taking a backup receiver like Gaffney or Caldwell and calling a mild ankle sprain a PUP injury and then paying them through Week 6 as a potential backup without roster cost? Well, Ken, that's the sort of the wink-wink, nudge-nudge, you know, saying them on, know what I mean type of thing that goes on with the PUP and the IR. Honestly, I don't know if a player cannot play based on what the coaching staff knows, I guess based on the reports from physicians, what have you, you can put them on the IR. I don't know that there's a definitive rule behind it. As for the nitty-gritty, I don't have it in front of me. Maybe we can kind of try to figure that out for you here and look it up. The way that injuries are in this league, and nobody's terribly forthcoming with injuries, it seems like anybody could be a candidate for IR. And there's always a wink-wink, you know, type of injury going on. And you could look at any team. And I'm not talking about just the Patriots. A lot of teams do this. And a lot of teams will try to hide guys on the IR, if not the PUP, just because they don't want to risk them being waived and being picked up by somebody else. So that's just one of those things that if a player is injured and a player is not expected to be available to play for a particular game and he could be out for a longer than, you know, say, weeks amount of time, you can put him on the injured reserve so that way you can go and you can pick up a player and qualify somebody from your reserve list, from your practice squad. That way you have an able body. The injured reserve list protects them, and it also allows you to have, in theory, an able-bodied player available in a particular week. I don't know that answered your question terribly well, but at least that's kind of how I'm looking at it. Dave says, I would agree that a lot of rain could help Miami this week, especially if Maroney and Morris can't play, leaving us with fewer backs, since in general it's harder to pass in bad weather, and passing is the strength of our offense. On the other hand, Heath Evans is a bigger back who may do well breaking tackles on a slick field, and Falk can certainly pick up extra carries when needed. Also, the forecast I saw only predicted scattered showers, not an all-day downpour, so I don't think that would be a big deal. It should cut down the heat for us. Bottom line, the Pats are far and away a better team, and I think they will prove it on the field as they have been doing all year. Fair enough. Good assessment there. Shall we go ahead and then get into a Coach Belichick at this time? Let's do that one. We've still got time for you to send your emails in as we continue to read those. Webradio@patriots.com, your email predictions, and how you would game plan for what seems to be a one-sided matchup against the Miami Dolphins, at least on paper now. I realize, we had again, if you're just tuning in, if you're just logging on, this has been a horrible place to play for the Patriots. It's been a house of horrors. It was last year in losing 21-0. So how can you be overconfident going into a place that you've never really had an appreciable amount of success before in the past? Maybe you figure that into your game plan as well. So send us that email, webradio@patriots.com. Let's pause here for a couple of moments and bring you Patriots head coach Bill Belichick.
General football question first. I happened to hear an interview yesterday with Jeff Fisher talking as a member of the competition committee, talking about the situations that have come up a few times this year with field goals at the end and calling timeouts and a couple of re-kicks. How do you stand on that?
Whatever the rule is, we don't make them. We just try to understand them and use them to our advantage. So I'm sure that'll be something that'll be addressed, you know, by the league in the offseason, whatever they decide. That's what we'll do.
Would you be ticked if another team did it to you? Enforce them?
It's whatever the rules are there.
Okay.
So, you know, and in the past, they've changed them during the year. So I don't know whether they will or won't, whatever it is. You know, we'll just try to take whatever the rule is and understand it and play with it.
Did you prep Steven for that in that regard?
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't come up, but you know, if it does, then that's the way we deal with it.
Bill, at tight end, you have Ben Watson who you can line up as a receiver, and you have Brady in there to block. Where does Marcellus Rivers fall? What kind of player is he?
I think he's got multiple skills. I think, you know, all those guys we feel like need to be able to do all the things that a tight end could be called on to do. They all need to block. They all need to catch. You know, that's kind of the nature of the position. So I think, you know, Kyle has done that and can do it. You know, he made a nice catch in the Buffalo game, you know, down the seam. I mean, I think he can do that. You know, Ben's done it. Ben's been involved in the blocking game. Marcel's, you know, I think they got to be able to do them all.
Someone as much
for his
blocking as Kyle is there danger of
getting
typecast, maybe not here, but
in
other places?
I don't know, but I think that's, you know, to play that position, if you can only do one thing, then it really, you know, limits the player, limits the offense, limits the system. So, you know, it's, you know, you get teams sometimes to get into that run-pass deal, you know, put one guy in the run, put another guy in the pass. I mean, that's not really where you want to be. So, you know, you end up with only four guys in the passing game, or, you know, depending on who the other guy is, you know, five or six guys in the running game, be able to lose that other blocker. It limits what you can do.
Bill, you mentioned yesterday about Cameron taking San Diego's system to Miami. Have you seen that be a positive impact on Ronnie Brown? And obviously, I'm not comparing him to LaDainian Tomlinson, but we've seen his production, you know, really up there.
Yeah, was that great production? So, how much of it's a part of the system? How much is part of him? You know, I'm not much sure exactly how that breaks down, but you know, he's having a very productive season. He's having a great year, and offensively, they move the ball, they score points, they create a lot of problems for you, both in the running game and the passing game, and the play action game as it certainly, you know, sprouts off the running game. So they've got a lot of big plays on their play action passes. They're, you know, they can throw the ball to their backs, the tight ends, the receivers, and the quarterback's athletic. So you know, they have, I think, pretty good balance on their offense, and I think that's shown up in the production. You know, it's just, I mean, Ronnie Brown's certainly a key guy, don't get me wrong, but, you know, plenty of other guys that are being productive in that offense this year as well. So you just, you know, it's not all Ronnie, because when you start to go to play action, then that opens up some big plays in the passing game that they've had.
As a back who can catch the ball out of the backfield, in any way impact your pass rush in terms of guys having to wait to read whether he's going out, pattern, staying in the
ball? Not really. Most of the guys who are rushing don't have cover. You know, it's hard. If you give a player rush responsibility and coverage responsibility at the same time, you know, cover him if he goes out. If he doesn't rush, then it's usually end up getting neither. So for the most part, the guys that are rushing rush, the guys that are covering have to cover, and they have to cover all the eligible receivers. So, you know, depending on whether it's man, zone, some kind of combination, there's a lot of different ways to do it. But the guys who are responsible for the people in coverage are responsible for them. The guys who are rushing rush. It's not always the same guys, but however you break that up in your defensive call, it's, you know, it's hard to give a guy both. You, like I say, usually end up getting neither. You know, you don't get any rush, and then half the time when the guy does go out, you don't get him covered because he, you know, didn't see him or wasn't sure he was going out, you know, whatever. So that's, I don't think that's the way to go.
Comment on the
two,
Chad Jackson and AJ Jackson?
Day to day. We'll just evaluate them on a day to day basis. Well, it's just not the same without Michelle in here.
Hey, Coach, you take a field into consideration when you go down there and play the golf as far as baseball?
I think that'll be all closed up now, right? I mean, I think it's a little bit of a factor when it's, you know, when you're playing on the infield. Uh-huh. But it's more of an awareness thing. I mean, there's obviously nothing you can do about it. So you just have to be aware when you're in there. It's, I think, a little harder to, you know, get off on the ball in the running game, probably a little harder to pass rush. But field's in great shape, though. That's a fast track. You know, it's short, it's fast, and I'm sure they'll have it in great shape. It's a good field. They do what everybody else does.
Have you seen Chad? I know obviously he hasn't been on the field, but in terms of preparation, how he approaches the mental side of the game, have you seen him make some strides on that? Just normal strides you'd see from having 1 year of experience in the league?
Definitely. Mm-hmm. He works hard. Yep. He knows a lot more this year than he knew last year, you know, going into the season or even at this point. So, I think Chad's, you know, he's done what he can do. You know, he's been limited in some things, but I don't think that's held him back on the other things. And he's works hard on his preparation and his assignments, and, you know, he's matured a lot. And I think he's made a lot of progress. Thank you.
One of the shorter visits for Bill Belichick with members of the Patriots media that I can remember in recent history, at the very least. Maybe it's just because there's just not that much more to talk about when it comes to tackling the Miami Dolphins on Sunday. We'll find out. And if it's a closer game than a lot of people expect, that'll certainly give us something to spin on for next week, won't it? Coach Belichick, of course, from earlier today here at Gillette Stadium, as we're in hour number two of Patriots Playbook. I'm John Rook. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll get off inside the Patriots locker room. Tom Brady, Ellis Hobbs, Kevin Falk, Kyle Echol today. Also Roosevelt Colvin and Heath Evans. So we have three of the Patriots running backs that stand to get at least spread the amount of carries if Lawrence Maroney does indeed not go in the running back slot on Sunday, although he was out at practice earlier today. Limited participation in practice with his groin injury, as they have termed it, but he did participate. In the meantime, back to the emails here for a couple of moments. Our friend Scott in Washington, D.C. says, John, talking about game shows, I was always a big fan of Wink Martindale's Tic-Tac-Toe. Sorry, you got the dragon. I remember that one. Tic-Tac-Toe's a good one. I'll tell you what it was, I thought was a vastly underrated game show, Gary. Vastly underrated.
Wasn't it Tic-Tac-Doe?
It was Tic-Tac-Doe. That's right. They played it Tic-Tac-Toe style, but it Tic-Tac-Doe. One of my favorite game shows of all time that I thought was really underrated was Press Your Luck. You remember Press Your Luck with the whammy?
Absolutely. I used to do that when I get a birthday card as a kid.
Absolutely.
Press no whammies, luck. No whammies. Hey, $20.
Yeah, $20. Woo! Yeah, absolutely. That was a great game show. Loved that one. And a heck of a lot better than the new whammy game show they're doing on Game Show Network, which was a sort of a modernized version of Press Your Luck. Press Your Luck was much better. I think, as I understand it, the guy who hosted Press Your Luck died recently, or not too long ago, if I'm not mistaken. And his name is escaping me, but I think I remember reading that not too long ago. So Press Your Luck was a good one. Scott says, I'm a little worried about our ground game and the ability of the Miami D to seemingly always give Brady a hard time. But I like our defense putting a show, especially after Dallas receiver Creighton's silly comments criticizing the Patriots' defense. So my guess for the score is a modest 24-10, Patriots. I hope I'm right that we win, but I hope I'm wrong about the score and that we can get into the 30s again, because I love the air of invincibility it is creating, which hopefully has an impact on future opponents' mindset. You know, Scott, that's a great point. I think a lot of people like to just, you know, beat the, you know, pulp out of teams just because.
Peter Tomarkin.
That's who it was, Peter Tomarkin.
Plane crash.
Plane crash? How long ago was it, does it say? Fairly recently?
06.
Yeah, I thought so. A year ago. Peter Tomarkin. Oh, thanks for this. You going to give us a little audio play-by-play? Oh, Gary, God. No, oh, that's wonderful, especially since I have to get on a plane tomorrow. Thank you. Thanks a lot. Appreciate that. Oh, by the way, give me one more of those for my computer. Thank you, because that's what I feel like doing with it today. So. Anyway, after 24 hours of computer hell. The air of invincibility, I think there is something to that. Because if you keep running up 30s on teams, you give people a chance to say, you know, if you keep badgering them and blasting them with those kind of scores, it's kind of like, how can we slow them down? And the answer is, well, how can we stop them? And the answer is, well, we can't. We can only hope to slow them down. So I think there's something to that. It's great for water cooler talk too, when you know your team is the Patriots, and you know you're facing your cubicle mate's best team the next Sunday. It certainly helps in that regard. But yeah, you're right. I'd like to keep that there for as long as we can, no doubt. Ken says, all right, I've already sent the email, but you didn't ask the game plan question until I'd already sent it in. So here's my game plan. Okay, Ken, you're entitled. Just because you send in one email, there's no moratorium on it. You can send in as many as you like here. Sometimes we get that on this program, too. One, stack the box. Stop Ronnie Brown early and rush the passer aggressively. Patriots can man up on the wide receivers and concentrate on just causing havoc in the backfield with an extra rusher in almost every play. Mix up who the extra rusher is and where he's coming from, but bring him often. Okay, we definitely want to stack the box. I would agree with that. You're going to try to make anybody beat you. You want Cleo Lemon to beat you. Destroy their confidence with short and mid-range passing plays. Show the Dolphins that the Pats can pass on them at will. Utilize crossing routes over the middle of the field while sending Moss long. Get the ball to Welker and Stallworth for good yards after the catch. Once Miami adjusts, then send a 40-yarder to Moss. Mix in a few runs. Don't even bother to try to keep the Miami defense honest. Showing them that they can't win no matter what will destroy the already fragile confidence of a team now resigned to a rebuilding year and not interested in playing their hardest, making the playoffs, or getting injured. I think that's a great point, Ken. I absolutely think that you want to beat this team, and you want to beat them down quickly. You want to go over the top. You want to pound them, and then hit them long. You want to knock them out if you can by halftime. Something tells me that just because it's Miami, they won't do that. But I guarantee you, I think that's as good a way to go as any. He says the first quarter of this game is more important than anything else. Well, there you go. Dolphins may come out with nothing to lose, but if New England shows dominance quick and early, Miami will quickly lose heart and fold the game easily. I think that's a pretty good analysis. Steve in Montana, my game plan for the Patriots would be to not miss the bus, get off the bus, put on uniforms, don't stay in the locker room, be on the field at the start of the game, stay at the game until it's over. Come on now, are you kidding me? Thanks, Steve. Thanks for playing our game, by the way. We got to have something to talk about around here, Steve. So are you kidding me? Okay? I mean, what would you want us to do? We could just sign off and sign on only when they lose. Come on. That's an attachment which I am not going to open, so sorry. Oh, you think it'll be okay? Yeah? All right, let me see. All right, let me give it a try then. Ah, there we go. Thank you. Steven, I'm wondering about a running back. Has Bill Belichick gone after a player to fill in for Morris? To me, this is a concern. No, and I don't think he will. First of all, I think you've got Lawrence Maroney, who's at least back limited somewhat this week. And because Morris may be out for a few weeks himself, I would not be surprised to see Maroney return to the field this week. I thought he was ready to go a week or two ago, and I think they've kind of kept him on the sideline because Morris was running so well. I think this would be a perfect opportunity for Lawrence Maroney to step back in. And I hope he does. If not, I think you'll see Kevin Faulk get the majority of the carries. And I know that that's not the optimum thing that anybody would like to see. I think you have to give some benefit of the doubt here and say that, Faulk has been around for a while, and he certainly has done anything and everything in terms of, pulling his fair share. And I think he deserves the opportunity to be that guy if the injuries keep the other guys out. As far as the game, 45-14 Patriots. Patriots are a much better team this year. I hope they keep Moss next year. And Dante Stallworth, what do you think? Well, we've kind of jumped around a little bit about this, Stephen, and thanks for the email. And I know the PFW guys have talked about this as well. I think you're actually much more likely to keep Moss than you are Stallworth because Stallworth's contract is backloaded, which means more money would become due next year. I'd love to see them keep both if there's a way that they can maneuver it cap-wise. I'm not so sure that that's possible. I think that if you had to make one or a judgment or the other over one of those two guys, that Moss would probably be more cap-friendly. At least that's just my thought. And then Steve says, oh, yes, almost forgot. Score prediction for Sunday. I'll be kind. Patriots 41, Dolphins 10. All right, now you're talking. Thank you, Steve, for the email. Appreciate that. All right, let's get into the locker room to wrap up the program today. And, again, we'll be back, of course, same Pat's time, same Pat's channel next Tuesday for our next edition of the Playbook as we'll recap the game with the Dolphins from this Sunday down at Dolphin Stadium, and then we'll begin looking forward to returning home after a three-week absence and facing the Washington Redskins here at Gillette Stadium in 1 week. In the meantime, for you now, we have Tom Brady. We have cornerback Ellis Hobbs, running back Kevin Faulk, running back Kyle Echol, linebacker Roosevelt Colvin, and running back Heath Evans inside the Patriots locker room for you today as they discuss what it might take to beat the Miami Dolphins.
Tom, this has been a team, a defense that has always historically given
Yep.
Is it the same defense you see on the field this year?
Yep, it's a great defense. It's funny, we're just laughing. We say, you watch all these other teams play them, over the last 6 years, and there's things that are open, and we get down there, and it's like they always seem to have the answer for whatever we challenge them with. So we've had some rough days offensively against them, and it's the same group of guys that are always leading that defense. So it's going to be a big test. It's going to be a big test. I know their record, obviously, I don't think really indicates what type of team they are. They've been in a bunch of close games, and they have a lot of talent. And like I said, they always have the right answers. So it's going to be a we need some great days of practice, and hopefully we can do better than we've done the last bunch of times we played them.
What? A lot of 3-4 defenses and a lot of schemes. What makes their scheme different than other 3-4 teams? You see a lot of our
Yeah, they don't do them as much 3-4 this year. But anytime you got Jason Taylor on that side of the ball and Zach Thomas, I mean, those two have been a staple of that defense since I came into the NFL, and they're always making plays on the ball. They don't make mistakes. They're great leaders. Their communication is always right on. So as long as those two guys are there, we're always going to have a hard time with them because they're so disciplined in what they do, and they're always making a lot of plays. We'll see. We'll see. You know, Sammy's done a great job. There's no doubt about that. I'm sure he'd have loved to have played this week, but, you know, we'll see how that goes. We'll see how his shoulder does, and hopefully he's back out there as soon as he can get out there. But the other backs, in the meantime, we're going to have to fill in. I think one thing that was great last week was the way Kevin Falk stepped in there and played and against a regular defense, running a bunch of runs that he probably hadn't run in a few years since Corey got here. So we're going to need more of that.
You personally, 2-4 against them. I mean, you've not had good times against them yourself.
In Miami.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're a tough team. They're a tough defense. They challenge in a lot of ways. They got great pass rush. I always talk about double coverage on the receivers. Well, it's a lot of double coverage on the receivers, and they force you to hold the ball. When they hold you the ball, man, that clamor is really close. Wait, that's a close-up. You see that?
Tell a reporter to step back.
That's right. God, I'm distracted now. No, we're on too good of a roll here. I'm not going back to that conference room.
How about this one? With Maroney being out, with Sammy being out, the running game, can you talk a little bit about that, you know, missing those two guys?
Yeah.
What's going to have to happen here?
It's a test. It's a test for the offense. And anytime guys are down, other guys have to step it up. Other guys have to pick it up. So hopefully we're able to fill in this week against, you know, a team that we always have problems with, especially down in Miami. So we know in 2004 they were 2-11, we were 12-1, and we got our butt kicked. So we got to play better than we did that day. We got to play better than we have against them the last four times we played them. We averaged 12 points a game, averaging like 70, 80 yards passing or something like that.
Tony, talk about your another cover on Sports Illustrated. Have you seen it yet?
I haven't. No.
Tom, you guys have been so good in the first quarter. How important not to allow their crowd, their players, to get amped up early in this game and give them some hope, continuing your trend? How important is that?
Yeah, it's always a great atmosphere down there. There's always a lot of excitement for that team. And we get quite a bit of Patriot fans down there as well. Everyone kind of displaced down there in Florida. So it's a great environment, and we need to – we always need to get out to a fast start, and we've done a pretty good job of that this year and played with the lead. And, you know, this is definitely a team you want to try to get up on. You don't want to get behind and be forced into a passing game against these guys, because with the way they rush the passer and they're able to cover the receivers, it eliminates so much that you try to do in the passing game. You really can't throw it quick because they're up there with man-to-man coverage on the receivers, and you can't hold it too long because, you know, Jason Taylor and Vonnie Holiday, they're coming. So got to try to get rid of the ball quick, and it's a fine line between, you know, getting the ball out quick but not so fast that their DBs are right on the receivers. You need time to create separation and routes.
Tom, how surprising was it to hear Wade Phillips basically challenge you to beat the Cowboys?
I didn't hear that.
Yeah, he basically put the onus on you to say, wanted to see if you guys could beat him through the air.
Yeah. He got his answer. So, you know, whoever teams try to defend us, whether it be the way Romeo tried to defend us, or Coach Phillips, or you know, Coach Cameron down there in Miami, you got to be prepared for whatever they do. So, if they want to make it a passing game, you have to go out and execute. And the only way to do that is to, you know, if they want to decide that's the way they want to play you, then you got to take advantage of that. And if they want to defend the pass, you got to make them. And try to stop the run. And it's hard if, you know, they make you pass and they're able to stop you. And it's hard if they make you run and you can't run it. So either way, we have to be prepared for whatever kind of the game ends up going, how it ends up being dictated to us.
It's about that time where you could get Troy Brown back. Troy could make a contribution to this passing game?
Yeah, we're always excited to have Troy around. We all know what Troy's all about. He's one of the greatest players in the history of this franchise, and he's a great teammate, a leader, and a captain, and he sets a great example, and he's a great playmaker, and I know he's excited. I think he's been bored as hell out, you know, working on just all the conditioning stuff. He's ready to get back to playing football.
As well as his passing game's been going, and as old as he is, could he still contribute to his passing game, make it take it up even another notch?
He's not that old. I'm sure a lot of you guys are older than he is, so I wouldn't go saying you all are so old. He's still a young guy as far as I'm concerned. He still runs around and makes a bunch of great plays. He has done that for a long time, so I look forward to him doing that this year. Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Yeah, about a power grade school.
Alice, what is it about Miami that always seems to give you guys trouble?
I don't know, man. It's just they have a knack for knowing what we're going to do, putting us in awkward situations on the field, and us not executing. Whatever it is, they know something we don't, you know. And our main focus is to go out there and try to expose them this time, but they've exposed us a couple of times in a row now.
Alice, what about the fact that they're 0-6?
Throw it out the window. Mm-hmm. Throw it out the window because since they are 0-6, that gives them more motivation in this game because of the success that they've had in the previous year, saying, you know what, guys, this is a great opportunity to get ourselves back on track with a victory, understanding that. And then, like I said, being 0-6, who doesn't want to win? So that motivates them that much more.
How much is a factor that it's hot down there? They play that up a lot down there in Miami, that it's so hot. How difficult is it playing down there in September and October? It's still 75, 80 degrees.
You know, whether it might be a factor here and there, but if you just hydrate, you know, take care of your body throughout the week. I mean, we just finished playing, you know, it wasn't cold in Dallas either. We understood that. And I think once you get around to this time of the year, you know, just hydrate and take care of your body, and the rest will take care of itself. It'll be a little hot, but it shouldn't be that much of a factor.
Alice, they just traded Chris Chambers and give Ted Ginn a little more time out on the field.
Yep.
What do you think of that, and how much are you looking forward to seeing that?
Obviously, they're trying to get their draft pick. They're trying to get their bang for their buck. You know, what can you say about it? Start watching more film on Ginn Jr.
Alice, what are your thoughts about maybe getting Richard back?
Glad to have him back. You know, glad to have anybody back that's come off the PUP. You know, jump into the program. We're not asking for much. All you need to do is do your job. That's the bottom line.
Sammy Morris is out. He had 550 pounds fall on him. Can you imagine that ever happening to you?
Oh yeah, I broke my collarbone 3 times, so I know exactly what he's feeling. All throughout high school, I said to if somebody 550 some whatever pounds. I don't think they were that big in high school, but somebody's landing on me this exact same way 3 times. So, you know, my prayers go out to him. I was hoping that it wasn't something to that degree or whatever it is. I don't know exactly, but it's something in the collarbone. So, you know, I know how it feels.
Patrick Creighton, after you all beat them by 21 points, said that the defense wasn't as advertised. You guys weren't as good as you all were advertised. What is your reaction to that?
Next question. Hey, same story, man. We've heard it before, so whatever. It's, you know, that's why we have 60 minutes. You have 60 minutes to prove what you got out there. And bottom line, we won the game, and, you know, we're worried about week 7. It's over with. You know, all the hype, all the hoopla, like I said, at the end of the day, you got to play the game in between the white lines. The results are in. Let's move on.
Thanks.
Obviously, a lot of depth at your position right now with Sammy out. I mean, how much confidence does that give you guys knowing that there's tons of other people that are capable of doing the job?
I think that's just being, you know, having a, you know, the good team, you know, having the guys behind you that you're going to have trust in, knowing that they're going to do the same job or, you know, close to the same job that the other guy did.
How much of a challenge is it going to be out there this week going up against a guy like Jason Taylor?
It's going to be a big challenge, you know, not just going up against Jason, which he has given us problems every time we played against the Dolphins, but I think it's just their defense in general, which, you know, we've had problems with over the past 3-4 years.
You know, if there's one game Sammy won, it probably would have been against the Dolphins.
I'm pretty sure it is, but, you know, right now, you know, he knows that he has to get better right now, you know, further down the line, which, you know, is a lot more important to us than right now. And so, you know, we just, you know, praying for him, hope everything's all right.
It's
just about knowing what you have to do as a player, knowing your job, being ready to do your job no matter what the situation is. And, you know, last week was just a situation, you know, a guy went down and another player had to step up and, you know, try to do the job he's done.
Thanks, bud.
Thank you.
I mean, that's
a little crazy with all
that. Yeah. It's exciting, I guess, but last week the game was, I think we played well, and it was an exciting end to it for me. And you know, I'm not sure what's going to happen this week, but I just have to stay prepared and keep focusing on making improvements and just doing what I have to do to help the team wherever possible.
How helpful is it to you that you've been in a couple of games now, gotten a couple of reps in games?
It's very helpful to get the experience and just a few carries to get to see things for the first time in a long time. And yeah, it's helpful. I mean, it just helps. Just the more reps, the more carries. You learn the blocking schemes, learn the system, learn the pace of the game, the speed. You know, everything helps. So,
Cal, how much do you learn from the guys like Sammy out there and Lawrence and Kevin?
A lot, a ton. And they're great guys, and they're helpful, extremely helpful with everything. And, you know, everybody here has been extremely helpful. I mean, that's just the best way I can put it. It just everybody's real supportive, and everybody's trying to help each other, help the team do a great job, and I think that's one of the keys to our success so far.
Are you ready to take on more responsibility?
I'm getting ready. I'm preparing myself day in, day out, trying to make the improvements needed to help the team. And wherever Coach Belichick and the staff points is where I go. So that's what I have to be prepared to do. And
Do you have a little more confidence now that you've got some game experience under your belt?
Experience helps.
Translate the practice into game?
Experience helps a ton in the game and in practice. And just with the more experience, you know, I feel more prepared. But, you know, there's tons of room to improve. Every week I see what I can be doing better. And I think that's a good part of the experience is I'm able to evaluate myself as I'm going on. So, yeah, the experience, I mean, it's extremely helpful as much as it is for everything. So. It was pretty exciting. So, you know, it was nice to get in there at the end and finally get it in. So.
Did you catch Tom's celebration?
No, I didn't. I was just really excited to get back to the sideline and sit down. we did a lot of running on special teams, and it was a good game. It was warm. It was, you know, it was humid down there, and it was fun though. I mean, a lot of running that game, a lot of points put up. So.
It's gonna be hot in Miami too.
Oh yeah, it's hot all year round there. So. That's no surprise to anybody, I guess. You know, South Florida is warm, and that's something we're going to have to prepare on as well. So stay hydrated and, you know, and just get that in your mind that, you know, the heat's going to be, it's going to be part of the game.
Have you talked to Sammy at all, wished him well at all?
Yeah, well, I saw him after the game and in the flight back, and, you know, he's got great spirits. He's a great guy, and, you know, so, yeah, I mean, that's what I could say about that.
From what you've seen in the Miami defense, what kind of things really jump out at you as far as the challenges that they're going to present to you guys on Sunday?
Oh, well, wow. they're a good team. I mean, they have good, real good players, and that's, we know that. We just got to do our job. I mean, we just got to, you know, do what the coaches are asking us to do. They develop a game plan, and we got to go by it. So just preparation is key, and especially for a team like they have with their players. I mean, they have really great. They're really great players on that team. There's no getting around that.
For you, I've done the Miami thing before, but what is it about the Miami Dolphins that always seems to get the Patriots trouble?
They continue to, you know, have some of the players year in, year out that perform well. So, you know, it's going to be a tough task for us. You know, they remain their core from year in. And, you know, going down there is always tough. You got to fight the elements as well as fighting them. You're going into a hostile environment, so. It's important to hydrate, and it's important to make sure we got the game plan down so we can go down there and execute well.
Thank you.
but they're 0-6.
That really has nothing to do with it. I think, you know, they win 10 games here on out, you know, straight, then they have probably a good possibility of making the playoffs. So I think for us, if we focus on the game, not necessarily the things outside of the lines, like, you know, their record, our record last week, try to focus on, you know, our mission to accomplish what we, you know, what we want to get done when we get down there, and hopefully we'll come out with another victory.
Would a wounded team like that be more dangerous, more of a threat than maybe a Dallas or something like that, just for the simple fact they are wounded and they're down?
Well, you call it what you want. I think they're a good football team. It's not like they've been in situations where they've just been, you know, overmatched. It's just, you know, you lose a couple games here and there by 3 or 4 points or a touchdown, and that's the difference between, you know, sometimes being, you know, 6-0 and 0-6. And so we're in a position where we're presented with a challenge, and it's going to be tough for us, you know, especially on the defensive side of the ball, because they present so many challenges. I think with the, you know, the younger guys, they're trying to get repetitions. Ronnie Brown is, you know, the top back in the league right now as far as, you know, yards per scrimmage. And they got a veteran group of offensive linemen, good group of tight ends. Quarterback is making plays for them. So, and you know, my boy Marty Booker is always down there, you know, doing his thing. So, it's gonna be a challenge for us.
Rose, does it help that they've traded away Chamberlain?
I mean, you know, he's always been a headache for us, but you know, the situation presents an opportunity for these other guys that we don't have a lot of familiarity with. But you know, it's still gonna be up to us to go out there and execute. And so, regardless if it's 84 or 86 or, you know, I think it's number 17. You got to get the job done. Yeah. So you got to step up to the plate, try to hit a home run. If you hit a foul ball, we're not looking for those. Looking for grounders, you know, pop, no, not pop flies. Yeah, but that was, I said that home run was the first thing I said.
What's your thoughts about maybe getting Richard back in the next week or two?
Oh, Richard's huge. 6'7", 300 pounds. A great force on the field, and I know he's been working hard. You see him every day, you know, trying to get himself prepared for his opportunity. And, you know, when that presents itself, I'm hoping that he'll be ready just like everybody else that gets a chance to go out on the field.
When is it going to stop for you guys to stop being slighted? Did you hear the comments about Patrick Creighton, who basically said the defense wasn't as appetizing?
Their defense or our defense?
Your defense.
I mean, everybody's entitled to their own opinion. I think, you know, what was important to us was getting the win. So they could have scored 100. As long as Tomlin scored 101, we won. So that game is last week. We don't play the Cowboys again. So we'll move on.
Was it fun for you to put your hand on the ground and bring back Purdue?
As far as the defensive end, I get to do that every week. That's what I enjoy about the game. I always like rushing the passer. You know, Bill says as a defensive player, it's your job to tackle the guy with the ball. Well, I always hope that it's a pass so I can go tackle the quarterback. But, yeah, that's how I got my situation that I'm in now. Just trying to improve as a player and get better on those other things.
But wasn't that we've
done a lot of different things here since I've been here, and that's one of the things that has always been incorporated in. Yep.
Rosie, day like 05 where you get a lot of carries because of the fact that, you know, running backs, right? Active.